Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, entitled The Appearance of Demon Vritrasura, Text 34. So we're going to read the prose. Duravabodha eva tavayam viharayogo yad asharano sharira idam anavekshitasmat samavyayam atmanaiva vikriyamanena sagunam agunaham srijasi pashi harasi. So translation word by word. Duravabodaham, difficult to understand. Eva, quite. Tavam, your. Ayam, this. Vihara yoga, engagement in the pastimes of material creation. Maintenance and annihilation. Yat, which. Ashraranaham, not dependent on any other support. Ashariraham, without having a material body. Idam, this. Anavekshitam, without waiting for. Asmat, of us. Samavyayam, the cooperation. Atmanam, by your own self. Eva, indeed. Avikriyamanenam, without being transcendental. I'm sorry, one second. Avikriyamanenam, without being transformed. Sagunam, the material modes of nature. Agunam, although transcendental to such material qualities. Srijasi, you create. Pasi, maintain. Harasi, annihilate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Purport. The Brahma Samhita 5.37 says, Goloka eva nijasyati akilatma bhutaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always situated in Goloka Vrindavan. It is also said, Vrindavanam parityajya parityajya padam ekam nagacchati. Krishna never goes even a step from Vrindavan. Nevertheless, although Krishna is situated in his own abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is simultaneously all-pervading and is therefore present everywhere. This is very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand. But devotees can understand how Krishna, without undergoing any changes, can simultaneously be in his abode and be all-pervasive. The demigods are understood to be various limbs of the Supreme Lord's body. Although the Supreme Lord has no material body and does not need anyone's help, he is spread everywhere. Maita tamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Nevertheless, he is not present everywhere in his spiritual form. According to Mayavad philosophy, the Supreme Truth, being all-pervasive, does not need a transcendental form. The Mayavadi suppose that his form is distributed everywhere. He has no form. This is untrue. The Lord keeps his transcendental form, and at the same, he extends everywhere, in every nook and corner of the material creation. Duravaboda iva tavayam viharoyogo yad ashrano sharira idam anavekshi tasmat samavyam atmani vikriyamanenam sagunam aguna srijasi pasi herasi. O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Om Agyana Timirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Shakshurum Nilitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Prachadne Nirvishesha Shnyavari Paschitire Shitarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Garadara Shosari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is the series of very beautiful and very philosophical prayers offered by the demigods to Lord Vishnu in anticipation of his appearance. Because as we know, every time it happens, then when the demigods are put in some kind of trouble, they seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least they know, they have that realization, where they are supposed to look for the shelter. In that sense, they are not in ignorance, or very often, due to being intoxicated by various reasons and various things, their own qualities or whatever, they do get implicated in various kinds of reactions, but at least they have a realization that whenever there is something difficult, they take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that sense, this is something pretty natural. The most often saying, even in the West, there was one very famous writer, he expressed this by pointing out, he said, there are no atheists in the trenches. Trenches are the, you know, like dig up holes in the war when the opposite sides face each other. So the soldiers dig up the trenches. They dig up those holes. They're called also foxholes. So he wrote, he said, there are no atheists in those foxholes, because everybody, you know, starts believing in God at that point. They might be big atheists at any point earlier or whatever, but once they face the reality of death, everybody starts believing in God. Everybody becomes atheists at that particular point. So demigods also very often, they perform different kinds of activities that definitely, as I said, put them in trouble. In this case, Indra became very upset with Vishwarup, giving offerings to, giving share or sharing the offerings of the yagyas that were meant for demigods, he was giving to the demons. And this is what upset Indra. Of course, he didn't have to punish him that severely to deprive him of his life, but this is what Indra did. And he accepted all these consequences. He could have counteracted that reaction of killing a brahmana, but he accepted it later on. So this is one of the good qualities of the demigods, that they, even though sometimes they fall prey to some kind of illusion like this, of committing some inappropriate activity or action, but still, they, due to their samskaras, good credit, good qualities, or we can even say, not just piety, but devotion towards the Lord, they always know where to look for the shelter and how to basically react when there is such a dire consequence that they're facing. So they take shelter of the Supreme Personality of God, and they offer very beautiful prayers. We see throughout the Shastras that a lot of information that we gather and understand about the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes through the prayers. And here we see that those prayers, where they're praying for deliverance from the great demon Vritrasura, or seeking shelter from him, they are very, very mature in their understanding of the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here we can see this particular prayer is very, very philosophical prayer. It contains a lot of information. A lot of information that practically encapsulates the position and the nature of the Supreme Person. So it is very significant. Here they said, you Lord don't need support. That's a powerful word, that the Lord, or a statement that the Lord does not need support. He definitely does not need support. There is nobody above him. There is nobody equal to him. This is what makes him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the contrary, if we analyze this material universe itself, and many material universes, they are supported by the Supreme Person himself. Like in this material universe, everything starts, of course, we know the universes themselves, but then even within the universe, first expansion within the universe, and the third one out of the Mahatattvas, Vishnu Tattvas, is the Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. From him, everything basically emanates. And even later transformation of the Kurma, and then later on Sheshanag holding the Bhumandala, and then Shishumar holding from the upper side in the form of a dolphin holding the other planetary systems, Bhu, Bhuvar and Svarga, we see that actually the Lord maintains and supports the whole universe. Because without his support, there is no way that universe can function. So he has to be present everywhere. He has to support everything. Ultimately, he enters into each and every atom. Therefore, he is everywhere. He supporting everything, absolutely everything. There is no way that he is not present. One of the first of my interactions in terms of such kind of conceptions was when I was somewhere, I think it was in seventh grade, secondary school, but I never went to the church and was never interested in anything so religious. I kind of had some conception, okay, maybe, even if there is God or whatever, let him be there, you know. What does this have to do with me? There was nothing so interesting about, you know, religion in itself. But I was sitting together with one fellow who was regularly going to church every Sunday, and even sometimes during the week he would be engaged in some kind of activities. And I would do some kind of nonsense things and talk all kinds of nonsense stuff. So sometimes he would tell me, don't do this, God is everywhere. God is present everywhere. And I was thinking, I was telling, you know what kind of nonsense things you're, you know, telling, you know, what God is everywhere. How is God everywhere? Where is God? You know, we have that conception, I want to see, you know, I want to perceive. Then I will believe and understand. So I was very skeptical about such kind of a statement. He couldn't substantiate it. He couldn't explain it philosophically or in any other way. But that was the position. That was the idea. He was just able to say, you know, God sees everywhere. Better, you know, don't do it. Don't get engaged and don't interfere in anything. That was kind of the idea. But I was very, very skeptical about it. Of course, theologically, that is very difficult to understand from the Western point of view. But the conception exists. Conception is still there, that God is present everywhere. And that he is supporting everything in this material world. So there is nothing, there is no place where actually God is not there. This is where Prahlad Maharaj, when answering Hiranyakashipu, pointed out. When Hiranyakashipu is asking, where is your God? Where is your God? Hiranyakashipu was thinking, Vishnu is hiding in the hearts of everyone. Must be hiding somewhere. So where is he? How is it possible? So then Prahlad said, he's everywhere. And then Hiranyakashipu got so upset and enraged that he kind of sarcastically inquired, is he in the pillar? Yes, my dear father, he is in the pillar. So Krishna is everywhere. Definitely he's everywhere. He's supporting everything. He's pillar of the everything. He's that support. He's absolutely everywhere. There's no place where he is not present. And just to fulfill the words of his devotees, he appeared from the pillar and he manifested himself. But of course, we cannot see him. Why we cannot see him? Because he is that absolute, ultimate cause. He is a remote cause. He is not the immediate cause. Therefore it is said, Mai sarvam idam tatam sutremani ganaiva. That there is no truth above him. There's no truth above him. And he is just like a thread of the diamond necklace that pervades the whole necklace. So we don't see the thread, like we have this kantimala. You know, we don't see the thread. We just see the kantimala. So in that similar way, we cannot perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because everything is resting upon him. But definitely he is all-pervading and he is present within everything, supporting everything. So further on, the demigods point out that the Supreme Lord doesn't have a material body. Definitely Lord has the body, but Srila Prabhupada, the word here in Sanskrit is asharira, which of course any Mayavadi would translate just he doesn't have a body at all. Srila Prabhupada definitely translates he doesn't have a material body. And this is something that any impersonalist is very keen to point out, that sure, why would he have a body? He is the all-pervading Brahman. So maybe temporarily assume some particular type of form, but definitely he is not in his original state having any kind of form. Brahman just temporarily assumes some kind of a form so that we can relate to him. This is their misconception. Of course, to substantiate this, Krishna very often leaves the material body to bewilder the atheists. If we read Srimad Bhagavatam, Departure of Krishna, after the whole pastimes where the hunter pierces his heel with an arrow. Then when Krishna was departing from this planet, he left the material body behind. So this is something that is very confusing. Then how can, you know, we see that the Supreme Lord had died and there is a body which has to be cremated. So how to understand this? So Krishna, who doesn't want to reveal himself to those who are atheistic, he further on confirms their misbelief by such kind of an evidence. So they can have something to point out that can confirm their illusion about existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because according to mentality, Krishna reveals himself. And of course, we are here in this material world because we don't want to see God. We don't want to believe in Krishna. We don't want to accept his supremacy. We don't want to serve him. Just on the contrary, we want all of those things to be served, to be supreme, to be ultimate enjoyer. So Krishna doesn't want to disturb us because then he would interfere in our free will. So he doesn't want to interfere in our free will. So if we want to believe that he doesn't exist, then he will make us believe that, you know, he doesn't exist. Even nowadays, modern science, you know, in a sense, when it's leading towards, or leaning, so to say, towards the atheism, trying to disprove God's existence, sure, God will give them, according to their karma, he will give them enough evidence to believe that he doesn't exist, just to substantiate their desires, their belief. So this is how Krishna is revealing his mercy, how he is so considerate about each and every living entity that he fulfills all kinds of desires. Isn't it so amazing? Even if you want to believe that he doesn't exist, he will make you believe that he doesn't exist. He won't disturb you in your idea that you are the supreme enjoyer, that you are the supreme controller. He won't disturb you. He will give you that opportunity to think, yes, this is the fact. I am actually God, and there is no God. So even when he appears personally to those atheists at that time, he leaves the material body behind so that they can again substantiate that kind of faith that he doesn't exist. Actually, and he is just mortal like any one of us, and ultimately even that material body and all the other elements will merge into absolute Brahman. So therefore again, the Supreme Personality doesn't have a form. It doesn't have a transcendental body. So it depends on the mentality. But if we have a mentality of devotional approach, we have a mentality of bhakti, or if we try to cultivate and develop this, then definitely Krishna will reveal himself, and then we will understand how he has the material form, yes, that he lives, but really that has nothing to do with him in essence, because he has transcendental spiritual form. He has transcendental body as well. So it all depends on our mentality. It all depends on our conditioning. We can find everything in Shastras. Absolutely everything. We can find something creative, we can find something destructive. We can elevate ourselves, we can degrade ourselves. Everything is on disposal. Krishna is that kind. But it's up to us. At least after a time of any kind of practice, we should see what kind of result we are getting in believing that Krishna is supreme or not believing that Krishna is the supreme. Are we getting some kind of substantial satisfaction or not? So we see that atheists, even though they try to shun the God, even though they try to completely, you know, forget about him, or even if they believe to some extent, they try to completely negate him, and being envious of him, they try to completely ignore him, they're not happy and satisfied. So at that point of frustration, as Mother Kunti said, you know, when all the material aspirations are completely frustrated, then the person starts slowly turning towards spiritual life. So then, at that point at least, there is a hope. Because even at some point, those Mayavadis people who have that kind of demonic tendencies, they also, at some point, like might be very long time that might be required for that kind of realization to occur, they also turn to be, you know, some kind of devotees. So there is some change. We see people very often, there are so many cases in the West, even here in India, I mean even in ancient times, scriptural times, so many people who are so averse towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotees themselves, who are so demoniac, who are so vicious, so mean, that at some point they have some kind of a realization and they start acting as a devotees and they become a devotees. Jagai Made, maybe just seeing the diorama there. There are so many examples, so many people that they have some kind of a change of heart. They have some kind of change of heart. So it's not the idea that, you know, eternally somebody is a demon, as some kind of a philosophy exists, even amongst the Vaishnav Sampradayas, that some are eternally demons, some are eternally devotees. It's not like this. Every living entity actually is a devotee of the Lord. But sometimes he acts just because of being an illusion in a very inappropriate way, in a very demonic way towards the Lord. Because we develop that envy towards him. And that has to be purified. Of course, it might not be easy, but the process is there. And at some point, definitely it will affect. Even though somebody might not be taking it directly. This is why we do harinams. This is why we are just present. Even by mocking, sometimes people see devotees, you know, they just get reminded of Krishna. And that's something on itself that is purifying. This is why we wear dhoti and kurta. This is why we shave our heads. You know, like this, so that at least people can get reminded, oh, this Hare Krishna devotees. Even that much is sufficient. Just to sow the seed, some kind of a seed of bhakti in the heart, or even the most greatest mayavadi. So therefore the Lord doesn't have material body, he has the spiritual body. Of course, anyone really deeply interested in understanding the reality of the position of the Supreme Personality of God, he can find ample of evidence in the Shastras that that body is Sat-Chit, Ananda and Vigraha. That he has the form, he has Vigraha, and his body is spiritual, full of bliss, knowledge and eternity. But those of course who are envious, they will just, like we know, Shankaracharya, of course, with a particular purpose, he didn't comment on all the Upanishads. He just selected several of them and he presented them. So this is why Mayavadis are very, very keen on just to study those Upanishads. Not the other Upanishads. There are so many other. Gopal Tapani Upanishad, there is Rama Upanishad, there is Krishna Upanishad, Narayana Upanishad, Narasimha Upanishad. There are so many Upanishads that directly mention the form, spiritual form of the Supreme Person. To be a spiritual one and not the material. So even though when he appears that he is not bound by the modes of material nature. Bhagavad Gita, it's so clear. Traigunya Vishaya Veda. No, what is that verse? In 13 verse, in 7 or 9 chapter. He is above the modes of the material nature. Anyway, that's what he's pointing out. He's above the modes of the material nature. That's why he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's that ultimate cause of everything. Another very interesting point here that demigods are bringing up is that Krishna doesn't need any cooperation from them. In the verse itself, they're praying, you don't need any cooperation from us. So here is another thing to illustrate his supremacy. He doesn't need anything. He's Atmarama. He's self-satisfied, self-sufficient. He doesn't need anyone's anything. But why he expresses the desire and why he is... Well, we can't say enforcing that upon us, but... he's instructing that that we serve Him, it's because of us, for our benefit. Nimitra matra bhava savya sachin. Why did He induce Arjuna to fight? He didn't have Arjuna to fight. He already pointed out in the beginning, they're already killed. All of those warriors assembled on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they're already dead. They're already killed by me. And Arjuna saw that in his universal form. But still he requested Arjuna, please become my instrument. Fight and you will get the credit. You will be benefited. So therefore it's for us. So demigods here, they're pointing the same thing here. Krishna doesn't need cooperation from anyone. Krishna can do everything alone. But if we cooperate, then we'll get purified, then we will benefit, then we will advance. If we follow the instructions of His, if we follow the instructions of the Guru Parampara, it's for our benefit. It's not for anybody else's benefit, it's for ours benefit. Like many times we would think, you know, why should I serve this devotee? Why should I serve that devotee? Why should I do this service? We don't see the maybe immediate benefit, you know. We don't see immediate benefit, you know. Now I'm wasting my time, or you know, I could do something else, or you know, it has really nothing to do in relationship to me. That's absolutely ignorant position. Very self-centered, selfish position. We don't understand that actually really we benefit in so many wonderful ways by exchanging the service. By doing something for someone else, although apparently, you know, might not be directly related to us. So this is something that very often we overlook, being covered by the modes of material nature. So therefore we have to push ourselves sometimes to transcend them by following the instructions. And then we can see actually how really we can benefit by having that wonderful spiritual transcendental consciousness, where then that cooperation is possible and then wonderful things are manifested just through that cooperation. So Krishna doesn't need any cooperation. He Himself, He is self-sufficient. But we need it. And demigods are acknowledging this. And then further on they're saying, you're the cause of the cosmic manifestation. You're the cause of the cosmic manifestation. So this is where Mayavad is again don't agree, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned earlier. No, Brahman is the cause. Brahman is not the cause. This is why very important is to understand the absolute cause, the ultimate cause, the remote cause, and then what is that immediate cause, and what happens as the effect. What is the effect? This material world is the effect, but who is the ultimate cause? Most often the analogy of the pot is given. If anybody is asked, what is the cause of the pot? What would be the answer? What is the cause of the pot? Like if you try to analyze what we have a pot or we have a glass, say like here. So what is the cause? What is the cause of it? Huh? Earth. Usually, generally, that's what would be the answer. The earth is the cause of the pot. But is it so? Is that the ultimate cause? Or is it just immediate cause? Huh? Krishna. Krishna. Revatrayam Prabhu is saying Krishna. It's not Krishna, it's the potter. Yes, it's Krishna, but we are still sticking to analogy. So ultimate cause of the pot is the potter. He is the one who ultimately, you know, models it, brings the material into the shape. He is the ultimate cause. So definitely here in this material world, who is the cause of the energy being formed into the effect that we are experiencing? It's God, it's Krishna. It's not a Brahman. It's not the energy in itself. It's not material nature in itself. So if you understand that science actually of the cause and effect, then we can understand how actually there is a person behind. It's not like Mayavadi conception, there is no, it's a Brahman without a form that is cause of everything. How it's possible? There has to be a person, there has to be somebody who is manipulating the energy. Somebody that points out to somebody who is superior than the energy itself. And that is the Lord, that is the Supreme Lord. There are so many wonderful instances where we have to understand that difference between cause and effect. And what is that ultimate cause? Why? Because then we won't be confused about the Brahman and Parabrahman. Then the things will be very clear. Again, like we earlier mentioned, nimitta matra. Nimitta means also cause. Become an instrument, instrumental cause. It's not a remote, it's instrumental cause. Depending on shades of causality, there are different ones according to different kinds of relationship. If it's something that it's nirgun, then of course it's transcendental. But if it's something related to within the modes, then it's definitely not transcendental, it's material. But in general sense, nimitta refers just to some instrumental cause. So what is the relationship between the remote cause and instrumental cause, or ultimate cause and instrumental cause, is that instrumental cause is not responsible for the effect, for the reaction. Are you getting this? Instrumental cause, it's not responsible. So whenever Krishna, like for example, okay, let's give the analogy. Like if there is a gun, and the gun fires, and somebody is shot dead, do we blame the gun? No, we don't blame the gun. We blame the person who fired, who used the gun. So gun is instrumental cause. And remote cause is the person. So the person goes to the jail. We don't put gun into jail, into the drawer, like this. No more gun, finished. It's like this. Of course, sometimes they do that also. But person goes to jail. He's the remote cause. So the idea behind instrumental cause is that he doesn't get a reaction. He's not bound by the reaction. He's aloof from the reaction. So when Krishna is asking us, you know, please become nimitta matra bhava savya sachin, become the instrument in my hands. Please do this bhakti, perform this service. We don't get a reaction, whatever reactions there might be. Actually, even good or bad. Of course, we might be attached to the good ones. We might be thinking, hey, why not taking good credits? But Krishna instructs us, don't be attached even to good ones. Mahaphaleshu Kadachana, very famous verse. He said, you have right to perform your duty, but you don't have right to for the fruits, actually. But the whole idea is of becoming that cause, instrumental cause. So why we have to fear? That's very important part of surrender, that why should we fear of becoming instrumental cause? That's how we can become detached. That's how we can really become aloof from whatever is going on. But by having a proper mentality, we can still serve Krishna and develop bhakti in that wonderful relation with Him. So this was the greatest fear. This was one of the reasons Arjuna didn't want to fight. He said, okay, Krishna, if I fight, I'll incur sin for killing so many people and I will go to hell. But Krishna later on in Bhagavad Gita, He completely dismantled that idea. Destroyed, shattered. No, you become my cause. And therefore you, as that gun, you know, you're not held responsible. And that is bhakti. We know that's a common example for bhakti, like a soldier who fights on behalf of the government. He is not held responsible. It's the government who is held responsible. This is bhakti. Bhakti means acting purely, solely for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't get any reaction for anything that has been done. Krishna purifies everything, absolutely. He takes the responsibility. So isn't that most wonderful state that anybody can be in? No? You do whatever you do, but you do it on behalf of Krishna. Of course, you do your best, because you do it with a desire to please Krishna. But you're not attached to the fruits. Whether something happens good or something happens bad, okay, Krishna, that's up to you. You deliver. But we have to try our best. This is our success in devotional life. To try our best. We do our best. And then what happens? That's up to Krishna. It's up to Him. So that's what means that instrumental cause, becoming an instrumental cause. and understanding that Krishna is the remote and absolute cause of everything. So this is how we should act. The same problem we found later on Yudhishthir had also. And Vyasadeva was also trying to convince him, arguing on the same point of the cause and effect. What is the cause ultimate? What is the effect? Of course, effect we know, what it happened after Kurukshetra. Millions and millions of people have been killed. And Yudhishthir again was feeling so morose, so disappointed, so horrible. Because he thought, now I'm going to get reaction. What is the use for living as a king, emperor for some 37 years that they lived, and I have to be in hell for trillions and millions and billions of years for killing so many people? It's actually my responsibility. What is the use? So I'm not going to take the charge. I'm not going to take up to that kingdom. Even Krishna couldn't convince Yudhishthir Maharaj to take up the reins, to take up the reign of being an emperor. Krishna couldn't convince him. Then Vyasadev tried. Vyasadev also argued on the same point of the cause and effect. And he gave example of a tree. When the tree is cut by the axe, who is to be blamed? Is it axe to be blamed? Or a person? And Yudhishthira agreed. It is person to be blamed. So Vyasadeva was pointing out, so you were acting on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're not the one to be blamed. You're not sinful. You're not going to suffer. But still somehow Yudhishthira was reluctant. And then of course, to glorify his pure devotee, Bhishmadev, then afterwards Yudhishthira agreed to assume the role of an emperor. This is the glory of devotee. Krishna wants to glorify his devotees. Krishna didn't convince Bhishmadev, Yudhishthira himself, but he inspired Bhishmadev to do so for his glorification. This is the wonderful relationship that Krishna has with his devotees. So what did Bhishmadev said? So Bhishmadev also pointed out various kinds of flaws in that kind of understanding, and he narrated a very interesting story of a snake and a boy. One boy has been bitten by a snake. And the mother of that boy she called upon a hunter. And actually hunter appeared there. Yes, hunter appeared there. And then hunter actually, he wanted to bind the snake and punish the snake, kill the snake, because the snake appeared to be the cause of the boy's death. But then that lady, she argued that actually it's not a snake who has to be blamed for the death of my son. Actually, it's not really the fault of the snake. Anyways, time is getting short. I'll just cut the story short also. So the idea was then that the snake pointed out that it was not my fault. I just bit the boy because of the influence of death, of Mrityu. The death was supposed to come and that boy was supposed to be dead anyway. So this is why I bit the boy. So then Mrityu is the one who is supposed to be blamed. And then Mrityu was summoned. And then hunter, at every point, he was just blaming everybody. He didn't discriminate. Whoever was to be blamed, he was finding them guilty. And he wanted to punish everybody. But then that lady was pointing out, no, there is no fault for this reason and that reason in neither of them. But then Mrityu said, no, it's the Kala. It's the time. In the course of time, this particular thing happened. And time is to be blamed. And then hunter also was already to punish even the time, including Mrityu and snake. But then somehow that lady still prevent him for doing so. And then Kala said, actually, it's not even my fault. It's actually fault of karma. It's all due to karma or karmic activities. And then actually, everybody was kind of convinced at that point that it is due to the karma, ultimately, that everything revolves in this material world. All kinds of reactions are taking place due to karma. So it's not the snake, it's not the ultimate cause of everything, it's not the death, it's not the time, but actually it is karma. It's our own fault. But this is just when we, in every case, And of course, this is the majority of the cases when we don't surrender to Krishna, that we are dependent on karma. Once somebody surrenders on Krishna, like we were discussing here now, and that's what Bhishma Dev was pointing to Yudhishthira, if you surrender to me, then you don't have any karma. You don't take any reaction. You don't take any, you know, responsibility. I'm the one who is taking every responsibility. And therefore, I'm the one who is, even if there is to be blamed, then I'm the one who is to be blamed, not you. And this is how Yudhishthira Maharaj became convinced and he took the charge of the empire. So that is the cause, ultimate cause, that is Krishna. If we surrender to him, then we don't have to worry about anything. So this is how wonderfully demigods are praying here. So here they also point out that you're the one who supplies material ingredients without being transformed. This is again another blow to the Mayavadi idea of Brahman being transformed in one way or another. Krishna doesn't get so transformed. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. Even though so many perfect and complete units emanate from him, he still remains perfect and complete in itself. He doesn't get affected. It's not like a paper that gets torn into different pieces and now you don't have a paper anymore. No, Krishna still remains complete and full in absolute sense. So he doesn't get transformed. Okay, we'll hurry up a little bit. We have a few more seconds just to complete the verse itself. So therefore, they point out that you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. So everything is actually done by the Lord. We are not the doers. We are just the instruments. Everything is actually... That's what we have to understand through this verse, that we are just immediate causes, even if we are to be called a cause. But He is the ultimate one. He is the remote one. He does everything. So nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activities, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. So although he apparently is dealing and he's involved in material activities, actually it's all transcendental. And he's not affected by them. Because he is transcendental. He's not affected by anything material. He's above, he's aloof. But he acts, why? Because of us. Just because of us. For our purification. He creates the whole material world so that we can get purified. And we can regain our original position. So they said that these transcendental activities of yours are difficult to understand. Yes, they're difficult to understand. But if we approach a bona fide Guru Parampara, then definitely we can understand. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha tyatpadeham punar janma naitimam eti. So Arjuna, one who understands that my janma, my birth, my appearance, and my karma activities are transcendental, that person doesn't take birth anymore again in this material world. So that's what we have to understand. It's difficult, it's not easy, definitely. That's why many people mistook Krishna to be an ordinary man, that he has an ordinary body. And that's why Mayavadis do, because of envy. So once we practice this process, and we try to purify that enviousness of Krishna, then definitely only then we can understand his transcendental position and his transcendental activities. That he is not bound like we are bound. That he is not affected as we are affected. So this is what it means to understand that difference between ultimate cause and us again as the immediate cause. Of course, here in the purport, Prabhupada, also there are a lot of things here to point out. He's mentioning how Krishna is always perfect and in that transcendental form, he never steps out of the Vrindavan. He's always present there. He's therefore simultaneously all-pervading and is present everywhere. So there's a lot of things to point out here. But as a conclusion, he still keeps his transcendental form and at the same time he extends everywhere, in every nook and corner of the material creation. So this is Krishna's position. He is everywhere, but simultaneously he has his transcendental form. He doesn't undergo any change as such. Therefore, he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll stop here because the time is up. Are there any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, in the purport it is said, Krishna, he is also not present everywhere in his spiritual form. Has it been said there? I think so.
Yes,
no?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Can you explain in what sense?
He is not present in his, as Prabhupada is pointing out here, in his that Vrindavan form. Krishna is a Krishna in Vrindavan. In that form, he is not present everywhere. He is present just in Vrindavan. In the form of Paramatma, he is present everywhere, but not in the form of that, as the Svayam Bhagavan. That's how. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.